and welcome to the One Goal US Soccer Podcast. Off the top, I should just say that my mic is not working today, so if it sounds poorly on my end, my apologies, but George will sound as good as always. And George, we'll start how we always start, minus that little hiccup there. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. You know, two US games back-to-back, lots of other good action. So we were excited last week, we're excited this week. And it's just been phenomenal. Lots to watch on our screen, lots to be excited about. And I'm happy, man. Couldn't really ask for more.
Yeah, man, I completely agree. Just a quick recap. It was USA 6, Panama 2. Good win for the boys. It was exciting. We went down early. Good response. We had a true number 9. And, you know, all things considered, it was a pretty productive camp for the United States. So I guess we should start there. And first of all, just give me your quick thoughts on just the Panama game as itself. And then we can maybe move into bigger takeaways on the camp altogether.
Yeah, I think just the Panama game, obviously going down wasn't great. I think the biggest concern from the game would be just the communication between the two center backs on both goals. They got split, not a lot of communication. They let the same exact attacker get by first with the header, and second time he kind of just split through. So I'd say that was the main reason of concern. But at the end of the day, Panama is a top tier opponent. They've had good teams in the past. Obviously, they made it to the last World Cup while we didn't. But like they mentioned multiple times in the broadcast, their golden generation is starting to fade away. The Roman Torres of the world, the Blas Perez of the world. We saw Gabriel Torres, who's getting towards the end of his career. So their sort of golden generation that did get into their first World Cup is starting to fleet. And they had a lot of new young faces, kind of like we did, but obviously just not the same talent level. But the thing is, if you're playing an inferior opponent, you need to make it evident. And I think the U.S. did make it evident. We scored 6 goals. That is not a normal thing for the U.S. to score 6 goals. So I think there's really not more you could have asked for. And it was great to get some new people on the score sheet.
Yeah, let's talk about those goals real quick. A lot of them did come from that number 9 position with Nicolas Giochini getting 2, Sebastian Soto adding 2 as well. Nice little appearance by him. But let's talk about the number 9 position. What did you think? Was it a big change? Did you notice anything tactically that was a huge shift?
Well, I think the first thing that I kind of said was, wow, it's crazy what happens when you put a forward at forward. So, yeah, I think of the 4 goals that were scored by true number 9s, none of them were crazy, but they were all strikers' finishes. And actually, I will give credit to Sebastian Legette because he did score himself. He scored a good header. But number 9 score goals. They know how to put the ball in the back of the net. The best thing you can say about a number 9 is that they didn't do anything other than score. I always say what a true striker is, they don't necessarily care about combining. They don't care about connecting the play. They want to score a goal. They could drop a 3 out of 10 performance if there wasn't a goal. They score a goal, it's suddenly it's a 7 out of 10. And that's what a true striker is. And true strikers get themselves in position to score goals. And I think the best example of the night was Nicolas Giochini's 2nd goal. Just the way he threw himself at the ball. He did not care if he got his head decapitated. He just thought, I'm going to fly at this ball and get into the back of the net. I think that is what a number 9 is. In that sense, what more could you ask for?
Yeah, no, definitely. I agree. I think it was cool just to have the guys doing what the guys are supposed to do. But in terms of tactical things, what I thought was actually interesting was, you know, Giochini in the space that he operated in was a lot similar to the space that Legette was operating in. But like you said, like that striker mentality in terms of, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to be a guy who's going to go for the ball and finish. And that's no disrespect to Sebastian Legette, but everyone, we all know that's not his best position. So I think all things considered, the false 9 experiment, or even just like the official name of the false 9 experiment, isn't dead per se, but I think playing a forward in the forward position is something we should expect and hope to see going forward. But I think all things considered, a good performance by Giochini, a good performance by Sebastian Soto. What about, you know, something I thought about was obviously the difference between this game and the last game, aside from the center back pairing. I also want to talk about Reggie Cannon on the right and Sergiño Dest on the left. What did you think about that?
I think after these past 2 games, I can confidently say Sergiño Dest is not only our best right back, Sergiño Dest is our best left back. What a lot of people have concerns with a right footer playing left back is that they don't attack as well. They don't overlap as well. Too many times their first touch is inside. But when I saw Sergiño Dest was starting a left back, I really tried to watch intently to see how he would do with that. And the thing about him is that though a lot of his touches did go inside, he still always progressed the play. He still always made things happen. So I think now we have that luxury where we can decide, Sergino Dest is going to play no matter what. He will do his thing on the right. He will do his thing on the left. He's still doing his step overs, his back heels, whatever. So now it's that luxury of, is it going to be Anthony Robinson? Is it going to be Reggie Cannon? Is it going to be DeAndre Yedlin who comes back, who is going to say, I am the other outside back? So I think that does give that little bit of freedom where it's not just Sergino Dest starting at right back. It's Sergino Dest starting at outside back. And I almost think he likes to play left back too, because you could see times where he kind of wanted to combine and then go inside and maybe whip an across, maybe take a shot. And I think that dynamic could be interesting when you have Christian Pulisic there as well. So it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward with that. But I did really like Sergino Dest at left back. And I thought Reggie Cannon had a really good game too. Got an assist, you know, got a penalty kick as well. So yeah, I think he put his best foot forward. But that being said, I still think I would like to see DeAndre Yedlin be a part of this group. I don't think he's done in terms of the U.S. national team circle. I think he still does have something to give. And I think we shouldn't just say, oh, because we have these new outside back talents, we should forget about what Yedlin has done.
Okay, well, maybe we can touch on that at some point in the future. I don't know if I technically agree with you, but I see what you're saying. On the Sergino Dest front, you know, I'm not sure about the left back experiment, to be honest with you. I think definitely compared to Anthony Robinson, he looked pretty good on the left. But at the same time, when he was on the right in that first game against Wales, I thought he looked really comfortable going one-on-one and doing his typical moves. Because at the end of the day, he is more comfortable on his right foot. And I think we saw a couple times against Panama where he would try to do these skill moves or try to make a quick 1-2. And it wouldn't exactly come off. And it's not to say that it can't in the future. And it's not to say that he's bad on the left wing. But at the end of the day, to me, he's much better on the right. I will say in his favor, one thing that definitely looks good on the left, and maybe this one you could also move to the right, is Gio Reyna taking space on the inside and Sergino just having that wing to operate. So I think that kind of idea, whether that's on the left or the right, is something we should definitely try to incorporate going forward. However, like you did say, Reggie Cannon, he was good. Showed, you know what, I can hold down this spot. And it's really one of those things where you wish that Anthony Robinson could offer that same thing on the left side and we wouldn't have this conversation. You know what I mean? Because I think if Anthony Robinson was just fine and he didn't have to worry, would we have this conversation at all? I'm not sure. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think Anthony Robinson, obviously, he had a long layoff from the national team, and he got significantly better in terms of his club career, became a Premier League starter from the last time we saw him. So in that Wales game, we were kind of expecting him to be right on, be like, boom, this guy's a Premier League starter. Of course he's going to be our left back. And it was a timid performance. We know he can do better. We've seen him do better. So it wasn't necessarily, obviously, maybe it was a little hard on us to say, oh, after that 90 minutes, we should have just penciled in Anthony Robinson as a starter. And, you know, Matt Doyle on Twitter, he was having a field day with his MLS takes. He was saying, oh boy, I wish I saw Sam Vines. And while I don't completely agree with the things he said, it is like when you think of Anthony Robinson, you kind of think, oh, should we take a look at a Sam Vines? Could Chase Gasper do that job? Do we still want Chris Gloucester to, you know, make his way up? Because when it comes to right back, and it's kind of what we talked about in the past of Julian Araujo, I hope I said that right. It's kind of like we talked about him where, you know, maybe he can go to Mexico, because if the U.S. is starting an important game and needs a right back, it is Sergino Dest every day of the week. At left back, there's not that same loyalty. So if you're Chris Gloucester, you're thinking, bro, give me like half a season at PSV, I think, to start for this team. If you're Julian, you're thinking, in order to start for this team, I need to go to Barcelona or Real Madrid. So that's kind of, we want somebody to block that path at left back the way Sergino Dest has done at right back. And Anthony Robinson, unfortunately, didn't show that. So we'll see where we go from there.
Yeah, in defense of Anthony Robinson, I will say, I mentioned this last time we were talking about the Wales game, was, you know, the guy playing ahead of him. And I think that's one of those things where you want to see the full team to really figure out that chemistry per se. But I think it's important, you know, if you have someone in front of you, you kind of know what they're going to do, you can react accordingly. And I think Anthony Robinson, we saw, was just running up and down the flank, and he looked like he really didn't know what he was doing. And I think if you have someone in front of him, like a Pulisic, where the responsibility to come into the attack is not as overt, maybe it's a different game. That's not to say he shouldn't have been better defensively and couldn't have been better defensively. That is both true. But again, he's 23 years old. You know, I'm not closing the book entirely. It didn't look good. It hasn't looked good in the past. But the fact that he's doing it for Fulham, like, there must be some reason why he's decent. You know what I mean? So I think there has to be something we can evaluate going forward. And I wish we could just find a way to get Sergino on the right and get Reggie Cannon to play. But it just can't happen that way. So you know, it is what it is. We're going to have to figure that out. That's something definitely we're going to look forward to figuring out when it comes to qualifiers, when it comes to maybe the Gold Cup, you know, whatever the next important game is for the United States. That's one thing I think Greg Berhalter would definitely work towards. But another thing I think we should talk about in terms of what's it going to look like is that center back pairing. Because I don't know about you, but I was not very happy seeing that Tim Ream, Matt Miazga pairing. I thought Matt Miazga was fine. He always ends up being fine. But Tim Ream, I don't love that guy. And we saw a little bit of Chris Richards. But what were your thoughts on really the center back position as a whole in the Panama game? And outside of John Brooks, like what are we looking at here?
Well, you just said John Brooks. I think biggest winner and center back in the Panama game was John Brooks. And obviously, once again, everybody's been saying it's who's going to partner John Brooks. But we really saw that in the Panama game. Panama, like I said, is not a true proper opponent. You do not want to be giving up two goals to Panama if you want to succeed, if you want to make it deep into the World Cup. So it was a little concerning that we broke down those two times, because the thing is, if we're playing a top team, let's just say within CONCACAF, we're playing Costa Rica or Mexico. If we give up those two goals, we can't guarantee we're going to score three and win the game. So yes, we scored six goals, but those moments were concerning. So clearly there needs to be a proper leader in the back, and that leader is John Brooks. And now I think that game showed that it's all open for who's going to partner him. I think that's probably one of the more exciting things I'm excited for. I would say it is the center back, the outside back, and then I'd say a striker that are up for grabs right now in terms of starting lineup for this team. Mm-hmm. So there's so many options too. So many guys are probably licking their lips at this game. You know, we talked to Eric Palmer Brown. I'm sure he was watching and thinking, I could definitely play for this team. I'm sure Mark McKenzie just finished second place for Defender of the Year voting. He's thinking, I can play for this team. Walker Zimmerman just won Defender of the Year. He's thinking, I could play for this team. Miles Robinson didn't have a great year, but I'm sure he's thinking, I could play for this team. So I think so many center backs, they all have the ability to kind of pop in. John Brooks is looking for a partner right now. He's looking for the Vidic to his Ferdinand. He's looking for his guy, his rock. And so I'm really excited to see how that's going to pan out. And if this December camp, you know, ends up going through, I think there's going to be a lot of guys looking their chops, trying to get the best look for Berhalter.
Yeah, that December camp will definitely be interesting. And we'll definitely have to do a nice roster breakdown / preview for that when that comes. But I agree, the center back position, you know, Miazga didn't do anything to really hurt his chances, but at the same time, he didn't separate himself. So I think that's kind of the important takeaway for me. But again, you know, one of the things we saw in the Wales game, we saw again against Panama, was how good that midfield combination of Musa, McKinney, and Adams was. You know, Eunice, if you're listening, brother, come on. Let's do it, man. I'm ready when you are. I was telling George, I was telling you this, man, off the record. But if Eunice commits and he's actually ends up being as good as we think he's going to be, we're going to have a Eunice singer in the world. I'm pretty comfortable saying that. But besides that point, I think the midfield was really incredibly strong. And we saw how important it was in transition, in defense, and just picking off passes. Like, that was just an unbelievably dynamic midfield. And it wasn't just a one-off. And I think that's something we should really look forward to in the future, assuming we do get Musa, which I'm not assuming, but I don't know. I'm excited about that. What were your thoughts about the midfield and just kind of the transition attack as well?
I think that midfield looked great for three guys who Adams and McKinney haven't played that much together. They're very comfortable with each other. They knew each other from their time in Germany, but truly they haven't played that much in the national team since they made their debut together. And then Eunice Musa, these guys didn't know him. They literally, nobody knew him before this camp. A lot of big name U.S. soccer guys didn't even know who he was before this camp. So the fact that they were able to get even somewhat of a cohesive midfield was incredible. And I think they all kind of showed what they do best. Tyler Adams sits back. He's not necessarily an expansive passer. You won't see him hitting incredible crossfield balls, but he wins the ball back. He recycles play. He's there when you need him in the midfield. And then Eunice Musa, not a lot of people knew about him, but I think what everyone could saw was he's a spark plug. He has those darting runs. He's 17 years old. Remember that. He is literally 17 years old. He could be a senior in high school right now, but he's out here bodying guys. He's putting his body in the way. He's not afraid to get stuck in. He's not afraid to back down. I love that. And then the player who I honestly was most impressed with throughout this entire camp was Weston McKennie. And I say this in the best way possible. He played with an arrogance. and that I haven't really seen him play with before. I don't know if it was because he plays for Juventus now, you know, he thinks he's a big name, but I loved it. He was out here darting through the midfield. He was trying Maradona's, doing step overs. He was out here getting, you know, 2 foot challenges.
Can we stop there? Was it, that was a red, right? Are we gonna?
That's a competitive game. It's a red card.
It was okay,
yeah, but yeah, obviously, but that's the thing. Like, I just loved it the way he was carrying himself. It was like, he was carrying himself. My coach, you know, says he's like a big Charlie. He was carrying himself like he was a big Charlie, which I haven't really seen in previous games, and I loved it. And I think the best part about it is that off the field, he was all jokes. You saw the videos of him, you know, smacking Reggie Cannon's head, smacking Chichiro Donze's head. Like, yeah, so like off the field, he's just such a nice guy. He's a jokester. And then on the field, the way he carried himself. And I just love that. I love that confidence. You need players like that. You need a player who's going to say, okay, guys, like, I'm going to take it from here. I'm going to, you know, be that spark plug for our team. I'm going to be that guy. So I love that from Weston McKennie. And I think the more reps that midfield gets together, it's going to be scary. The oldest guy in that midfield is 22 years old. That is scary.
Yeah, bro, it is. Dude, that is a devastating midfield. Like, it's really, like, the amount of energy, very much enjoyed that. But I want to go back to one of your earlier points. You talked about the starters. You said the left and wing, left and right wing, they're locked down. So I do want to push that a little bit because we talk about our boy Uli Lanez, had a good game. You know, he looked a little bit rusty, but hasn't played a bunch for here in Reen. So I understand that. He missed that little 1-2 combo with Weston McKennie, which actually, touch on that for a second. I think that our possession as a whole has greatly improved compared to last time we saw this team, in my opinion. Would you agree with that? The possession and just the confidence we all play with as a team has definitely improved.
Yeah, I think last time we saw the team play was against Costa Rica, MLS guys. It wasn't, you know, phenomenal. We got the PK. But like this time we saw confidence. We saw guys try and do things. We saw combinations try to be had. And that's all you can really ask for.
Yeah, and I would even go back to even the Canada game. Like, it just seems like then we are still trying to figure out what our style is. And I feel like now Peralta's seeing the talent he has, and it kind of fits both ways, which I really like. But going back to that winger point, you know, I think Gio Reyna is someone we should eventually pencil into that position. I think maybe we could even argue about if he's a starter right now. Probably is, all things considered. But, you know, Uli Lanez, Tim Weah, even saw Richie Ledesma, you know, what do you think about kind of looking out that winger position? Like, what does it look like to you even throwing a Jordan Morris into that mix? You know, was there anyone from this camp you thought that really stuck a chord to you, Conor De La Fuente as well, that stuck a chord that said, you know, this guy is someone at full strength, you want to bring him in as part of the roster? For me, that guy is Tim Weah. I just thought, you know, he looked good. He looked confident. Obviously, a little bit of rust, but I love the confidence of that guy. Is there anyone just kind of, I want that guy?
Yeah, I think, like you said you weren't sure if, you know, if it is as penciled in. Let's just say Pulisic is starting at one of those winger spots. The reason why I say locked in isn't necessarily Gio Reyna. I think it's either Gio Reyna or Jordan Morris. I do not see any other winger in the pool starting over them and keeping Gio Reyna, who's starting for Borussia Dortmund, the second best team in Germany, a perennial Champions League team, and Jordan Morris, possibly the MLS MVP, best American in the MLS, both on the bench. Of those guys you named, I do think, you know, they had good performances. Uli Lanez tried to do things. He had the shot, which Nick Giacchini ended up scoring the rebound off of. Tim Weah still getting his feet at Lille this season, but he got on the field. He had that little quick corner that led to a goal. So, you know, his brain's still sharp. But at the end of the day, I just don't see any of those guys keeping Reyna and Jordan Morris off of the field. Because those are two top guys. Those are two guys who are killing it in different facets of soccer. So to keep them both off the bench, you have to be truly spectacular. And I don't think any of those guys are really at that level yet.
No, I don't disagree with you. I think that's a really good point that they're not at the level yet. But I think, you know, there are some guys who are closer than others. I thought for Ledesma's sake, he looked a little rusty when he came on. But, you know, those two assists, it's hard to argue that production. Everyone was kind of like, what's he doing? What's he doing? You know, even on that free kick that Panama had, and he was kind of pointing to the runner, and then they passed the ball down the side. He's like, oh, geez, that's probably my guy. I should go after him. So I think that was kind of a funny learning experience for the kid. But I think, like you said, all things considered, it was a pretty good camp. It was, you know, everyone did something. Everyone showed that they belong to some degree. But I want to talk about another debut, the debut of Chris Richards. And I know this is a good opportunity for us to share your little story with Chris Richards, how you saw him when he was a young player and seeing him now. Just give me your story and then give me your takeaways.
Yeah, it's for me, it's crazy how far Chris Richards has really come. I've known him for about just over 3 years now, because my junior year of high school, we played against Houston Texans and we tied them, should have won, but they had Christian Kappas. He was our center midfielder. He was their captain. At that point, he hadn't had any national team call-ups. And I remember going from that game thinking, no, oh, that kid was pretty good. And then the next year, Houston Texans had an amazing season in the DA. They ended up winning the entire title. So I remember once they were getting to the later rounds and they were in the semifinals, I was like, okay, we literally should have beat this team less than a year ago. Who could they possibly have now that is making them a championship team? So I turn on the stream. I see Christian Kappas. I'm like, yeah, you know, obviously I remember that guy was good. They had a new striker, Alex Bruce, who plays for North Texas now. And then I see in the back, they have this center back with an afro wearing a headband. And I was like, okay, I know for a fact I remember that guy. So like I do some research. I see he's from Alabama. It's his first season. He's playing a year off. I end up seeing he commits to UNC. And I just decide, I'll keep an eye on him. Then he moves to SC Dallas. Then he signs a homegrown. Then he goes on loan to Bayern. Then he makes the U-20s. Then he signs permanently for Bayern. Now he's on the full national team. So I literally remember when I just saw Chris Richards, I didn't even know who he was. I just saw him stick out like a sore thumb because he had a thick black headband on. And I was like, okay, like, you know, this guy has some swag to him. So yeah, it's been incredible to see Chris Richards rise. I thought, you know, he had a little, you know, unnerving moments in possession, nothing that, you know, caused any counterattacks or anything of that sort. It was a very quick cameo. But I think for him, the important thing is just to get his club situation, you know, settled. He's too good for the third division of Germany. Hopefully Bayern somehow gets him on the field or he gets a loan, maybe even a permanent move. I think, like we said, the center back race is so open, and I don't want to put names into people's mouths, but I think if we polled US soccer fans now, the name that if we had like a wish to break out in the next 6 months will be Chris Richards. I think people are dreaming of starting Chris Richards next to John Brooks. But right now, the unfortunate truth is that it's too soon. He does not have even up to 90 minutes total for Bayern Munich above the, you know, third Bundesliga. So I'm very hopeful for Chris Richards. And I think the important thing is just to get his club situation settled, because we are begging for that to happen so we can absolutely kill it for the national team.
Yeah, I completely agree with you said there. You know, I do want to mention also Tutul Rahman, he ran a poll on Twitter about like, who do we want to break in? And everyone said, okay, we want it to be Chris Richards. So I want to shout him out for, you know, grabbing the pulse of the US soccer fandom and actually proving that's the case. So you were right about that. And I, you know, I think you're right about, not only is it game time, I will correct you on one thing. You did say he doesn't have a full 90 minutes. He did play, I think he has at least 90 minutes in total at the right back position, but a conversation for another day. But talking about the center back, like you said, he was a little unnerving in possession. I think that's the most important thing right now, because for me, I've seen the same thing when he's playing for the first team with Bayern. He's a little bit conservative, and that's fine. You don't want your center back going crazy. But at the same time, when you're playing against Panama, when you're playing against these CONCACAF teams who are really going to put an elbow into you, and you know they're going to be aggressive, it's kind of hard to say, hey bro, I know you're 20 years old and you know you can't have a legal drink, but you know, I think you're ready to handle the physicality of Panama. And I think that's a lot to ask from a guy who hasn't fully broken in with this club. And like you said, you know, he's probably good enough right now to contend for that spot, but you need to see it more in volume. And for all we know, he didn't show it that well in training. And maybe, you know, he's definitely a quality player. He showed for the time he had was a little bit nervy, and he showed, you know, he's part of this team. At the end of the day, he's one of our best prospects. But until it actually happens, we can't say it's going to happen, make it happen. You know, you have to see some level of, okay, you can do it there, so now come do it at the national team level. So I think that's kind of the next step for Chris. Like you mentioned, maybe it's a move, maybe it's a loan move, but it just comes down to, can you get first team minutes at the end of the day? And I think that's the most important thing for a lot of our players. You know, the same thing can be said about Conrad De La Fuente, who's making the bench at Barcelona. You know, it's, can you get minutes? And I think that's the most important takeaway for me, is like these guys like a Richie Ledesma as well, even Tim Weah, we could throw into that, is can you get the minutes? And if you get the minutes and you perform, you will get rewarded with a national team call. And these guys already showed they have the talent. It's just about, can you put forward consistent performances? So I think that's the grand scheme takeaway. But I guess we can kind of slow it down a little bit and talk about bigger takeaways, you know, kind of things. Do you think, okay, we saw this. Now, December, we have a camp coming up with the MLS guys. Now, imagine, we're not going to forecast what that looks like, but put them both together and put your Greg Berhalter hat on, look outwards and say, I like this, I didn't like that. What's kind of stuck out to you, either in the Panama game or just altogether?
I think one thing, which I guess Greg Berhalter hat, is that we have the Euro snobs, as people call them. And I think this camp shows we do need our filler. Like we need our MLS filler. Like this was, for the most part, you know, other than I'd say Josh Sargent, correct me if there's anybody else, this was the best European team for the most part we could have had. And this was a good, yeah. Oh yeah, obviously we can't forget Christian. So Josh Sargent and Christian. And so yes, this was a good team, but we couldn't necessarily throw this team out there in a competitive game. Like I guess we could, but you know, we kind of still feel like we're missing a little bit of something. Like we need our MLS guys. We need Jackson Ewell maybe to be there. We need Jordan Morris. We need Walker Zimmerman. And I think that's just something that, you know, I kind of got an appreciation for, because it didn't feel whole. People want to say, if you want to play for the national team, you need to play in Europe, this and that. But this was our European squad, and it still felt like it wasn't whole. It still felt like we could plug in people. It still felt like we could be stronger.
So let me ask you this. So do you think it was as simple as just like, oh, we need the MLS, or we need kind of a veteran presence? Because I think it might be a combination of both. And maybe most of the guys you allude to in the MLS are kind of that veteran presence. And yes, you know, Brendan Aaronson was not there, and I think that's someone full strength who comes in as well. But you talk about a guy like Walker Zimmerman, you know, or a guy, I guess even like Mark McKenzie, who's not truly a veteran, but a guy like that in terms of Walker Zimmerman, who kind of, you know what you're going to get. Because a lot of these guys, they're good. We know that they're talented, but you don't always know what you're going to get. So is that kind of what you mean in terms of MLS guys? Or is
yeah, exactly. And I'll say Yedlin as well, even though he is European, I just forgot him. But it's kind of like we're talking about with Anthony Robinson, where like, yes, he's clearly a good player. He's somebody who I would not be upset with him starting games, but if we have guys who are 20-something years old, and we have uber-talented guys like Gio Reyna, who just turned 18, Yunus Musa, 17, turning 18 soon, then you kind of have to look at the starting lineup saying, okay, are we really going to go into a competitive game with an average age of 21? Probably not. Like, right. They could all be talented, but do you really want to do that? So then you kind of have to think, okay, where can I throw in experienced guys without going crazy, without going overboard? So then you say, okay, maybe I take out Anche Robinson and start DeAndre Yedlin. Maybe I can sacrifice Yunus Musa for this game and start Sebastian Legette. Maybe I can sacrifice Chris Richards and start Walker Zimmerman. Maybe I can sacrifice Josh Sargent and start Jozy Altidore. And that bumps up the age range. And then you have these guys hungry to come off the bench. So that's what I kind of mean, where It was incredible seeing these young starting lineups. It was great to see Conrad get a start, Uli get a start. All these guys, you know, really get to put on the national team at the full level for the first time, second time. But I think going to a competitive game, you still need that balance. So you have to look at where can we fill in those gaps with those experienced guys, where it doesn't necessarily take away that youthful identity of the team.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. I think the youthful identity is incredibly valuable, and that's going to be our main asset going forward. But like you mentioned, like, you still need that veteran presence. And you saw with John Brooks in that Wales game, like, that guy is just so calm and collected. You know what I mean? Like, he is so confident. It's so easy for him. And I think I don't know how John's feeling, but if I was one of those kind of players who's in my mid-20s, I'd be like, yo, is there anyone else out here kind of like me who's kind of more relaxed and can kind of settle the tempo down? And I think, you know, it's great to have Weston and Tyler as like our young leaders, but you still need a veteran presence, especially against those CONCACAF opponents who are physical. You don't want those young guys being pushed around, get hot-headed, and then, you know, the next thing you know, a guy gets a red card for a silly foul. Like, that's the last thing we want. So I think, like you said, those veterans are important. I think it's also to know, like, those guys will still have a role going forward. And I'm just like, all things considered, I will say this was a very productive camp. You know, I really have no issues. I do wish Eric Palmer Brown got the call. He wasn't that preliminary roster. So had there been an injury, he would have been in if we needed him. So that's unfortunate to see, but I think it's just motivation for him to keep going, keep working hard. And like you said, and like we've always said before, that second center back position is wide open. So we're going to see what that looks like. And I think in terms of other debuts that maybe I think I liked also, I thought Johnny Cardoso, you know, he kind of looked like, guys, what am I doing here? This is kind of my first time playing with y'all. How do I do this? But at the same time, he showed, you know, there is some quality in his game. He offers a different type of six, almost like a Jackson Ewell type of six compared to Tyler Adams. So I think in a game where you want to hold possession, slow things down, come in like the 70th minute after Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, and Yunus Musa absolutely destroy and wear out the opposition, the perfect guy you want to bring in is a Johnny. You say, slow it down, let's spread it around, and let's just take some time. So I was encouraged by seeing him. I think that backup six position is his for the time being. And I think, you know, all things considered, again, a very productive camp. And again, shout out to Greg Berhalter. Bringing Yunus Musa in, regardless if he commits, that's big, man. Congrats to you. Congrats to all of us. You know, all the dual nationals. Congrats to everybody. It's really a cool thing to just see what that looks like and to see, you know, all the joy on these players' faces when they get to come in the game. Sebastian Soto, he's scoring. You know, he's warming up now. He's no longer as chilly. You like that one? Thank you. And you know, just all that kind of stuff. Giochini, he looked hungry. He said, you know, I'm just playing for the team. So I think, you know, it's just cool to see these dual Nats come in, make an impact, and feel like they're important parts of the future, because they are, you know. And now you can have the game experience to say, bro, we actually value you. Like, here's a reference point to see that. So I don't know if I have any other takeaways, but dude, I'm excited for December. I feel like it's like we're almost kissing these guys goodbye, and we're going to see them in another year, another 280 days, but we'll see them soon enough. You know, we'll be tracking them in their clubs, and we'll have December MLS guys who now become super MLS homers and then say those are the players we only need. So we'll be plenty of time for both. But again, I'm encouraged for US soccer, and now I have at least a data point to say why I'm encouraged, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, a couple random shout outs. One shout out RSL Academy. These two guys who play with each other since they were in their early teens, combining for two goals on their debuts. So if you're their coach who was coaching them when they were 14 years old, that's kind of incredible to see. And it's what dreams are made of, assisting twice for your boy, scoring twice off of your boy. I can't even imagine that. So shout out Sebastian Soto and Richie Ledesma. Shout out RSL. And then I'd say the biggest takeaway off the field for me is how close these guys got. And there's so many guys who knew each other from the U20s, but, you know, keeping up with these guys' social medias, the guys who don't know each other, Nick Giochini has never been in a youth national team before. Yunus Musa just came to the US, and all these guys don't know each other. And I'm looking at Instagram, and they're commenting on each other's pics. They're sending heart eyes. They're sending kissy faces. They're saying, I love you, babe. They're saying, like, you're amazing. Like, it's incredible to see. Like the way they got so close over such a short period of time. The guys are making Yunus Musa feel absolutely loved. He's saying happy birthday, bro, to Gio Reyna after knowing him for a couple of days. It was incredible to see. I'm sure there was a new group chat made. I'm sure they're all a part of it. I'm sure these dual nationals are, you know, very excited to be a part of this. I'm sure the new guys are excited to be a part of this. And I think just that off the field camaraderie was amazing to see, and just how close they were able to get.
Yep, I completely agree. I think we should honestly wrap there, because I don't know what else there is to hit. Like, we're still as happy as we were before. We went through the game. We still won the game. Yes, the Wales game wasn't great, but look, we can't have them all. And at the end of the day, we still did learn something. So I think without further ado, we can wrap up this edition of the One Goal US Soccer podcast. Again, I do really apologize for my mic. Hopefully we can get that sorted out for next time. And is there anything else? We might have an interview coming up. Can't tell you who, but I like his name. There's your hint. Anything else?
Go USA.
Go USA. Go USA. Anyways, rate, review, and subscribe. All that good stuff. And we'll be back this time next week.